From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The time has come for legislators who support high spending in Illinois to make a decision. Join us in passing structural reforms and a balanced budget, or continue to block structural reforms, including term limits and fair maps. But if you block reforms, then use your supermajority to pass your own tax increase to pay for the spending level that you want. But please, choose now. Choose now. Time's up. Let's be reasonable here. The people of Illinois have been waiting long enough.
And that is Republican Governor Bruce Rauner speaking to a suburban business group this week. And he was kind of telling Democrats, well, do something my way or take the highway and vote for something else. And saying time was up with the state budget and you need to be reasonable. House Speaker Michael Madigan released a statement in response to that. We'll talk about the latest call from the governor for the Democrats to join him in his reforms on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Brian Mackey, State House reporter for WUIS and IPR, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Joining us from our State House Bureau, WUIS and IPR State House Bureau Chief Amanda Venicky, and our guest this week, Doug Finke from Gatehouse Media, which includes newspapers in Springfield, Peoria, Galesburg, and Macomb, among others. Doug, thanks for stopping by today.
Glad to be here.
And we also, watching the show today, have some visitors from Ukraine sitting in the studio to hear about Illinois politics and government. And so we welcome them as well. Amanda Venicky, you hear this call from this governor. Is this anything new other than that it happened this week?
I think that he's ratcheting it up a little bit, really trying to put the pressure on Democrats and alleviate blame, take it away from himself. You heard him during that speech say the time is now, that these cuts are outrageous. And he also tried to, in a sense, extend like, all right, I can't even say olive branch, but maybe like olive seed, where he said, we've accomplished things, we have come together on criminal justice reform, and reiterated that it took months for it to happen, but that Democrats and Republicans came together to fix last year's budget when it had a deficit heading into the beginning of Rauner's tenure. But no, none of it was any different, despite his administration trying to argue that during the speech, he laid out all of the savings that have occurred during the Rauner administration, that was new, that was significant, and that he was touching on the ways where he has made compromises. For example, a Chicago casino that he's opened to it. Nobody saw that as anything new. And so, in fact, I think all that it did was instead focus more on that it's 100 days without a budget, focus more on how far apart we are, and that's because of the reaction from House Speaker Michael Madigan, and focused even more also on perhaps some of the drippings of talking out of two sides of his mouth on the part of Governor Bruce Rauner there. While he's proclaiming some savings, he didn't mention any of the savings that have been seen as very controversial because they're hurting people, for example, taking low-income working parents off of being able to get childcare. And he, you know, said, this is outrageous. Of course, he's the governor that's saying it's outrageous and horrible. And he's the one that Democrats say had the opportunity to prevent all of those horrible cuts that he was decrying.
And I think it's important that a big part of his speech to this Southland Chamber of Commerce, he reiterated his request to weaken public employee unions. Mm-hmm. And that has been a non-starter all this time. And just having him repeat that is not moving the needle one iota. It's the Democrats are not going along with this. And that message ought to be clear by now. And Maybe they can reach some compromise on some of the other issues, but I don't see the Democrats ever giving in on that one.
Well, and during that speech and subsequent to it, he had another event. The Chicago media kind of had a fuss after that speech. The governor refused to answer questions. And the next day on his public schedule, he was set to make a bunch of appearances and again, not have any additional media availability. That changed and he ended up doing one, but not much news came out of it. Something that happened in that speech, though, and then his press team sent out talking points, basically a list of all of the Democrats that have voted to do things that harm or take power away from public employee unions. So, for example, all of the Democrats that voted for the now tossed and found unconstitutional pension overhaul. And that was seemed to have been proof on Rauner's part that, look, they've done it before. They can't constantly just have the mantle of we're standing up for unions and we're not going to do that. Democrats say that, all right, no, first of all, the governor hasn't actually negotiated with them on these points. What he's saying is a compromise isn't. He's just saying it in a different way. And second of all, that yes, they did take hard votes, that they aren't always just aligned with unions, but they're not going to do things that are so contrary to their beliefs and cutting unions off at their necks.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between passing that pension reform bill that certainly was not popular with unions and some of the things that are in Rauner's pension reform proposal dealing with public employee unions that you don't can no longer negotiate over wages and items
benefits,
like that.
I mean, healthcare.
That's a core of labor negotiations. And you know, there's a big difference between what they may have done in the past on the pension reform and what Rauner wants them to do now.
And I would make a couple points, too. And one is the distinction between some of the legislation that the governor cited that Democrats supported in the past. One was reform of the laws governing teachers' unions, particularly in Chicago. That was a package that was negotiated between the unions, the city, interest groups, education reform groups, and it passed with only one dissenting vote in the Senate and the House. And at the time it was signed, Governor Quinn made much of the fact that this was a product of negotiations and it was made possible because we didn't have one side demonizing the other. And a second point that I would note is that in the clip we used, the first item on his so-called turnaround agenda that the governor cited as being essential was term limits. And I defy anyone to show me how term limits has any impact at all on the FY16 budget. And if they say it does, I challenge them to actually read the proposed amendment. The amendment, were it adopted, would say, starting in 2017, no one can serve in the Senate and the House more than 10 years, so it wouldn't actually have an impact into 2027. Now, how can a proposal that will have an impact in 2027 have any effect at all on the FY 2016 budget? That would be my question.
You know, Charlie, that's, I think, one of the things that makes this hard to explain to people is that what does this have to do with the budget? How can't they just get together and pass a spending plan, deal with taxes? And it's because all of these things are outside issues. I know as a reporter, when you're trying to condense all of this, it's a difficult thing to write. I would say that I think the Rauner administration's come back to that, and while they don't address it all that head on, is that a true belief that Illinois has gotten into this place because the concentration of power in legislative leaders, and particularly in one legislative leader, Michael Madigan, has allowed all of this to happen, has allowed unions to be more powerful, has hindered any sort of efforts on the part of business. We can look back to, I know a couple of years ago, we were covering Madigan coming around more to the side of business. So the speaker plays that, but I think that that's part of it, where Rauner sees this as his chance, and they've gone this far now. If he gives in, it's never going to happen. This
and so we'll wait for another 12 years for it to have an impact. Right. Mm-hmm. That is really clear thinking.
I want to backtrack just a minute. Related to the governor's comments up north, the House Speaker did come out with a statement that he released that day. He wasn't out talking to reporters that I know of. What was the thrust of his comments that they released in that prepared statement?
The thrust of his comments were, as I read it, the same thing that he's been saying all along. He repeated the fact that he would work with the governor and try to reach some resolution to this impasse. But he's not going to do anything that, as he puts it, hurts middle-class families. And he and the Democrats have said all along that the changes that, or many of the changes that Rauner wants on, like workers' comp and for public employee unions, are in fact going to hurt the middle class.
I will add that also in that statement, to me, was one thing maybe a little bit different in that Steve Brown, the spokesman for Michael Madigan, came out afterward and basically, all right, so first of all, you have Steve Brown saying that Durkin, the House Republican leader, after having called House Democrats saying that they were using the people that are affected by the budget as, quote, human shields, Steve Brown came out and said Durkin was basically using Rauner, and Rauner went out the door by not talking to the media, screaming like a scared second grader. And further in his release, the speaker also really put the blame in a more pointed way than he has done when he had his availabilities going back to when the House was actually in session here in Springfield. He said there is no question that Bruce Rauner is to blame. And it was a pretty straightforward statement from the speaker, who often doesn't speak in that fashion.
Okay, now let's backtrack here just a second so I'm following. Who's the scared second grader, or was acting like the scared second grader?
Steve Brown says that Governor Rauner was.
And I would chime in here to say that the reason he said that is because the governor did not take questions, as he has not been doing very much recently. I know the AP reporter traveled from Chicago to Effingham last week in order to try and get some questions to the governor, because he does these appearances, but he is very rarely taking any questions from reporters. And he even hasn't been doing that many appearances. Remember, all the bill signings that he's done this year have been in private ceremonies. There have not been public. There's no ribbon cuttings. There's no big announcements of things like that. He's been, you know, very much trying to control his message. And I think that some of the anger that you've seen among reporters and what Steve Brown was trying to, you know, play off of, and a lot of Chicago reporters were a little irritated, is that the governor's office was calling people and saying, this is going to be a major speech. This is going to be a big game changer. You should go cover this speech that he's giving. So they pile in the news van or their cars or whatever and drive out to the suburbs and they cover it. And here's the governor saying the same thing he's been saying for months and months, another campaign speech. I went through my archives and we get the email of the stories that our fellow public radio reporters do. And it actually called up some other ones based on the subject line that were identical, basically the same story from 3 months ago, saying, here's the governor making yet another campaign style speech.
Exactly. And someone should remind the governor that actually he won the election almost a year ago now. So it's about time he started acting as a governor instead of as a campaigner. He's shown that he's a very effective campaigner. We've yet to see whether or not he can run the state.
This is what we hear from a lot of people who have met with the governor. This is what the speaker has indicated, other leaders have indicated, is that they go in to meet with him, and it's a campaign-style speech that they're getting, even interest groups, other people. For one thing, the leaders have not met since May, late May. All four legislative leaders, the top Democrats and Republicans in the House and Senate, have not met as a group with the governor since late May. They've apparently had individual meetings and phone calls, but they've been described as not productive, at least by Democrats, and even at least one Republican have called them not productive, and it's because they're not really negotiating on anything. The governor states his positions, which are pretty far out there from the Democratic perspective. The Democrats say, those positions are far out there, we're not going to go for that, and then we go into now more than 100 days without a budget.
Let me throw in one more thing, though.
Ahead,
I've been as critical of the governor as anybody else, probably more so than most. I've also been critical of his staff for the smart aleck remarks they made. And I think it was totally tasteless for Steve Brown to make that comment. And I would call him out on that. It's not the kind of civility that we need if we're ever going to get this task accomplished.
And it's in stark contrast to the tone the speaker has tried to say, where he's used this line, I will work cooperatively and professionally with the governor. He said that repeatedly all year.
Should we ever work, I will
should,
work,
yes. Should we ever
work cooperatively. Okay, I want to take it back to that event one more time just to follow up another point as the conversation moved along, Amanda. So the governor departed there. Whether what grade he was in is up to anybody's individual interpretation, apparently. So the legislative leaders from the Republican side did field some questions on this issue.
Yeah, they did. And again, there really wasn't much of a change in tone there. They're continuing to stand by Governor Bruce Rauner and his stances on this whole budget matter. That really hasn't changed. There was some attention given to the comment by, again, Durkin, that some people, speaking of perhaps tasteless comments or ones that may not be productive to any sort of compromise, when, again, he said that they are using these poor souls as human shields to deflect the blame, was the comment from Durkin in terms of Madigan and his fellow House Democrats there.
Now, I'm a little bit surprised some of the reporters up in the Chicago area even made it out to a governor's appearance this week, since everything was talking about the Cubs in the playoffs. But in light of that, the Cubs in the playoffs probably occupied a lot more page space in the paper. So while this created some drama for political reporters, probably didn't really resonate much with the general public, would you say?
No. Do you want me to elaborate on that? I mean,
the point, but go ahead and elaborate.
I mean, this is, I think it's been somewhat of a problem all along, is that the bulk of the state budget is being spent as we speak because of various existing laws, court orders, and what have you. And there certainly has been impact on people, like we've discussed, low-income parents who need daycare and don't have access to it anymore. But by and large, I would argue that a lot of people probably have not experienced firsthand any impact from this budget impasse. And until they do, or if they ever do, we may just be going along in the state of limbo.
Yeah, and that's where I think the governor has been very surgical in this shutdown that Illinois is, you know, this partial or slow motion shutdown, however you want to call it. It's been a very surgical shutdown, and the governor worked hard to make sure it would be that way. He signed the education budget so that the schools would open on time. He went to court after, you know, going to the hilt in his rhetoric against state employee unions. He kind of championed himself, or made himself seem to be the champion of state employees at the beginning of the new fiscal year this summer, when he went to court and argued that they ought to get paid, even though there was no legal authority for the state of Illinois to cut checks for its employees. So he has kind of engineered this crisis so that the things that people would notice, you know, if you got into an accident on the interstate and called 911 and there was nobody to answer the phone because the state police employees weren't working, you know, people would notice that. That would get a lot more public attention. But the things that are falling through the cracks right now, mainly funding for universities like the University of Illinois Springfield campus, where we're recording this show, and, you know, funding for human service providers. So people who have schizophrenia or addiction or children with autism, these people do not have a great voice, and it's not, you know, a big visible thing that, you know, TV news is covering with breathless coverage every night. But, you know, there are effects being felt. It's just very small and concentrated.
And it could grow, though. I will have to add, speaking of 911 real quickly, while the state police are still there to answer those calls, 911 call centers are not getting the money that they depend on from the state. So they are, in time, it seems, going to not be able to have people there to answer that call in the first place, to forward it to the troopers.
And is there, you know, enough pressure starting to bubble up that was perhaps some of the reason that the governor was out there saying time's up and trying to put the verbal pressure on, or at least the perception of pressure on the Democrats? Because it usually comes that the governor in these situations often wears the collar, even regardless of who's to blame.
But the more that he's out there and using his bully pulpit to point the finger at others, I think there are a lot of very frustrated voters. We see that in the presidential debates, early stages right now, that don't like politicians who've been around. Rauner, yes, of course, now he is the governor. As Charlie noted, he won election nearly a year ago, but he is still a relatively fresh face who continues to say that it is those old guys who caused the problem and aren't letting me do the changes that I promised you. Of course, we know that he didn't necessarily get into what these changes would be when he was on the campaign trail, but change sure as heck sounds good. So there's that. He has the power of the bully pulpit, and there's been polling released, polling that was done more by his own camp, but nonetheless, that seems to show that voters are still sticking with him and blaming this guy called Madigan. Where it's an interesting changeover, of course, is that Rauner will, if he wants to keep this job, you have to go again for statewide election. House Speaker Michael Madigan does not. So he doesn't have to care as much about what the public thinks of him as an individual. It's just the legislators in their own districts, and that's a whole different game.
And I still, while I think Speaker Madigan has gotten some name recognition among those who are follow government minimally, I still think it might be overstated that people are aware of who the House Speaker is in Illinois. Or any of the legislative leaders, it's much easier for people to remember a governor's name.
And even if they are aware, they're not necessarily going to take that on. Well, I know that this guy locally, he may be a Democrat and he may work for the speaker, but, you know, he's always knocked on my door. I shake his hand and, you know, he might have a different opinion of your local person. It doesn't necessarily hurt people throughout the state or hurt elected office holders that the speaker is being painted in such a negative light. I think to answer your earlier question, you know, when does this pressure start to build? And as Amanda alluded to, when the governor's poll numbers start to go down, you know, he's got a tight, I'm sure he's got his finger on that pulse, or his people do. And if that starts to happen, then maybe we would see that he would change his tune. But I would argue that he hasn't really been using the bully pulpit. I mean, he went on this big turnaround tour where he was giving lectures earlier this year about why he felt his agenda had to be enacted. And now, as we said, he's not really doing that many public events, or he's doing very non sort of controversial public events. I think he was with some fitness guru opening some school gymnasium equipment rooms a few days this week, or at a few schools this week. But he has not really been out there, aside from this one speech, sort of beating the drum for his agenda. Because, you know, if the question is fully funding the government or, you know, sticking it to the government and private sector workers who belong to labor unions, then, you know, maybe voters would begin to think of that differently.
I want to move on to another topic, and that is of the Auditor General. William Holland announced his retirement earlier this year and leaving at the end of the year. They have now selected the finalist, Doug Finke, for the recommendation for Auditor General, which has to be approved by both chambers of the legislature, and this time around, the recommendation is a Democratic lawmaker.
Right. There were 14 people who submitted applications for the job, and that list was narrowed down to four finalists. Representative Frank Martino of Spring Valley, a Democrat, he's part of Mike Madigan's leadership team, was the recommendation of the Legislative Audit Commission, which is a bipartisan panel of lawmakers. They recommended him. It still has to be approved by both the House and Senate, and it has to be approved by 3/5 votes. So I think Martino is a well-respected lawmaker. He certainly is very knowledgeable about budgetary issues, and about he's just got experience in all manner of state operations. The Audit Commission voted 11-1 to recommend him, which meant that even Republicans voted, most Republicans voted in favor of him. There was one senator, Jim Oberweis, Republican, who voted against the nomination. He thought there was an auditor from California who was more qualified. He tried to get her name put before the legislature also. The Audit Commission did not recommend her. So when the vote comes, it'll be a chance up or down for Mr. Martino. There are people, even though Martino's a Democrat, point out that Bill Holland was chief of staff for the Senate Democrats before he took the job. When he was selected, there were some concerns at the time about how independent he would be, and I think everyone agrees that in his 20-some years on the job, he has more than proven himself independent and nonpartisan. So I think the hope is, or the belief is, that Martino will be the same.
Are there any warning lights out there that all of a sudden Republicans could reverse stance and make this a partisan issue?
I mean, I suppose they always could. Certainly the Audit Commission, the fact that Republicans on that, or most Republicans, recommended him, would send a message to their colleagues in the General Assembly that Martino is an acceptable choice. But, you know, until you actually get to the floor vote, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
We're at the point in the show where we have time for some notes from the field, and we'll start with Brian Mackey.
Yeah, there was word out of Chicago this week, a pretty apparently, allegedly, I guess, brazen act of corruption has been leveled at former Chicago Public School CEO's Barbara Bird Bennett, who was emailing with this group called Soups Academy. She was steering a no-bid contract to them, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, worth $23 million for a promise of up to $2.3 million in kickbacks and a job, as well as some other perks. Word is that she is going to be pleading guilty to these charges, but just yet another black mark. You begin to wonder, when are people going to learn after George Ryan and Rod Blagojevich and all the lesser public officials whose names are not as well known as those two? Just, you know, people continue attempting to rig the government in their favor. And, you know, the U.S. attorney fortunately still seems to be watching.
Doug Finke.
There's going to be a hearing coming up. It's a Senate subcommittee on a bill that has been introduced that would do a subtle change in the way voter registration is handled. Now, if you go into a driver's facility, you are asked if you want to register to vote at the same time. Under this bill, the process would change, and you'd have to specifically say you do not want to register to vote. Otherwise, you automatically will be registered. It's seen as a way to increase voter registration and hopefully voter participation.
And Amanda Vinicky.
Illinois has two new state senators. That is because former state senator Darren LaHood is now Congressman LaHood, and Dan Katowski is now the executive director of an organization called ChildServe. So he has been replaced by a woman named Laura Murphy, now senator, who is sworn in, and also just sworn in this week, Senator Weaver of Peoria, who's taking LaHood's place.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks today to Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media for joining us. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.